Hey, Tommy, we've had quite a few weeks. You were in Korea. I was in California driving a G-Wagon. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about all of that. Plus, you did a walk around of what?
The Seoul Mobility Show. So this was a really cool thing. I got to experience a Kia pickup truck, which is crazy, the new Hyundai EV6, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And you will see that at the latter half of this podcast, my live one-take walk around. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to talk a little bit about what it was like being in Korea, talk about some of the really interesting car culture I saw and how it impacts our culture here in the U.S. And then you took a crazy road trip in the new Mercedes G550. And we want to talk about what the new G-Wagon's like, because I know we have a big off-road audience and a lot of folks interested in G-Wagons like we are.
So let's start with kind of the biggest news, and that's the new IONIQ 6. Now, this is a refresh. Of course, the IONIQ 6 is a sedan, which is not, you know, in right now. It's electric sedan, but the last version, people thought it looked a little frumpy.
Yeah, so it was called the EV Streamliner is what they were going for. So they wanted to kind of harken back to like the 1930 streamlined cars, as I understand it. And I had a really cool opportunity to actually talk to the head of Hyundai Design, who's a guy you know, a gentleman named Simon. He's a British dude, really cool guy.
And he came up with that whole pixel theme for all of the Hyundai vehicles.
Yeah, and he's kind of the design lead when it comes to everything that Hyundai does. And if you haven't noticed, Hyundai has been doing some pretty crazy designs. You know, you've got like the Santa Fe, which is now kind of like a baby G-Wagon. I got to see the upcoming Palisade when I was in Korea. A stunning car. Absolutely gorgeous. So really crazy designs. And I was talking to him about the IONIQ 6. And what's unusual about Simon is that unlike just about every other executive in this industry that are very PR trained, Simon is PR trained, but he's also very genuine and will tell you really good stories. And he pretty much said that, look, with the original IONIQ 6, we had a plan. And he thought some of the elements didn't come together in a way that he wanted them to come together. And then when they did this refresh, he's like, oh, shoot, that's what we should have done from the beginning. So he was really transparent about this. But this new IONIQ 6 has taken kind of a weird, bubbly, angular car and made it into, I think, the best looking sedan on the road. So they got rid of the second ducktail spoiler. They only have the one ducktail now. They've moved the headlights down lower. They've made it look lower and wider, and it just looks phenomenal. This is such a cool looking car now. I think that we see that across a lot of Hyundai designs. I saw the new Nexo when I was there, which is a really bold design as
That's
well.
That's the hydrogen car.
Yeah, the hydrogen car.
Hydrogen fuel cell.
The new IONIQ 9, which is this gorgeous luxury car, electric, that I saw there. So just amazing stuff that this company's doing and really down-to-earth people.
So I probably told a story before, but it's worth repeating. So I was there for the initial launch of the IONIQ 6 in Korea, and they launched it at their auto show. And even though I was there kind of for a preview of it, they didn't let me actually film it until it was officially launched at the show. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that I was going to do a walk around with Simon.
Yep.
And so, you know, the car is there, and there's all these Korean YouTubers and journalists and bloggers there also, you know, covering the story. And there's one gal, I guess, in Korea who has like a shtick where she lays down in the back of the car.
Yes.
Right? This is her thing. And keep in mind, Korea is a notoriously conservative culture. Mm-hmm. Like I was in Busan, and at the beach, nobody wears bikinis there.
Sure.
Nobody. Very Christian, very conservative. Anyway, so I'm doing a walk around with Simon, lots of people. So you kind of ignore the people and you just try to concentrate on, you know, what he's saying. And then we decide to do an interior kind of walk around, I guess you would call it, right, where he's kind of talking about why they did this and why they did that in the interior. So he's sitting in the driver's seat. I'm sitting in the passenger seat. I've got the camera rolling, got the camera on him. He's kind of walking me through the different controls. And here there's all this like commotion happening in the back. People are folding seats down, and I'm trying to really ignore it. And then I asked him, well, why did you do kind of that funky rear end? And he said, well, let me show you. And he turns around, and of course, so I turn around with the camera, and this girl had decided to lay down in the back of the car, and she had laid down feet first. So when I turned the camera up,
oh no,
yeah, right up, you know what,
oh no,
oh my god, oh, we both turned red. It was so embarrassing. I just turned beet red. I mean, it turned into like TFL After Dark.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, and I started stuttering, and I was like, oh my god, what the hell did I just
gotta
do?
Cut that out of the video.
Yeah, you know, and this was not on purpose. This was just completely, you know, trying to do my job. turned into a pervy old man by accident. So I love Simon, and I think that's a story he might even remember, because I think even he turned a little red when we turned around. So new version of that car is good.
Yeah, so didn't have any experiences like that. Thank gosh.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
But I had a really good time at the Seoul Mobility Show. I mean, what I've learned about Korea as a culture, and especially as a car culture, is the manufacturers are kind of king in that society, and they own the market. I mean, something like 70 or 76% of all cars sold in Korea, new cars, are either a Hyundai, a Kia, or a Genesis. I mean, it is the vast majority of cars. And it's so – it's almost like being in Detroit in 2009, where you go down the street and everything is a – you've got an Equinox and then an Escape, and then there's a what is that thing? There's some Dodge Caliber coming down the road, right? Everything's American. You go to Korea and all the cars are Korean. But you really kind of see why the cars are designed like the way they are when you go – into Seoul, because it's such a future-forward culture, right? You get the impression that they never get kind of stuck on the past, and you really see that in the car design, where everything is kind of pushing the bounds as to, like, well, what should a car look like in the future, and why can't we have these pixels
here?
So
no Tri-5 Hyundai equivalent.
No.
Tri-5 Chevy Hyundai equivalent.
I don't think I saw a single car pre-1995. I don't think I saw a single car pre-2010 even. I mean, everything feels brand new and shiny, which is kind of crazy.
Having been there as well, the one thing that I did get struck by is just how people obey the speed limit. And I don't know if that's because
they're also very low.
They're very low.
Super slow.
And I think they have speeding cameras everywhere. And so everybody's driving, you know, at whatever the posted speed limit is. And I kind of feel like they haven't developed like this crazy cool car culture that Japan has, right? Where you've got people that are drifting up mountainsides. I'm not sure, at least I didn't have a sense that any of that is happening. And that's because even though in Japan, similar to Korea, people are very rule-abiding, there is kind of this kind of underground, Tokyo drift, Fast and Furious vibe that does happen in Japan, but I didn't see any of that in Korea.
Well,
at least not yet. Just starting.
I don't think it's allowed. So the key to establishing a good car culture, one of the keys is modifications, right, and personalization. And I was talking to a guy on my program from Spain, actually, but he runs a Korean car blog that focuses on – and he went to a Korean car meet when we were there.
Yeah.
And I asked him, like, you know, I don't see any modified cars. He's like, well, the government's been really cracking down on them. So in Japan, you've got a huge modification culture and
yeah,
there's
Liberty,
so much
Liberty
you can
walk,
do.
Right?
Exactly. In Korea, as I understand it, that's just largely not allowed. So that kind of limits your expression and what you can do with your car. But having said that, the cars that they do have, and I'm talking once again back to Simon, it's not paid. I just think his designs are really interesting. Is they have certain cars that we don't get in the U.S. Like one of the coolest designs I saw there was something called the Hyundai Grandeur, which is this. It almost looks like a 1980s or 90s S-Class that has been modernized. So it still has like an opera window in it, but it is futuristic, almost Mad Max-y. So really interesting proportions and visual designs that I saw
there.
So
I was trying to think of a Korean sports car. So when I was there, they unveiled the, what was it called, the N74? You know, the crazy...
Yeah.
Like,
Vision N74, yeah.
Yeah, the crazy hydrogen-powered sports car. But when you think about it, Kia or Hyundai don't build a sports car. The closest they get to a car that's kind of mad is the Ioniq 5N. And there was the Stinger, right? But that was also kind of a four-door.
Well, no, but you had the Genesis Coupe. That was a sports car.
No, there's nothing like a Corvette. You know what I'm saying? There's no true two-door sports car.
Genesis Coupe! It had a turbocharged four-cylinder with the manual transmission and two doors. That's a sports car.
It's not like a Corvette. I'm talking, that is more of a GT.
Well, nothing's like a Corvette.
Oh, sure, of course, Ferrari.
What's like a Corvette? Mid-engined? Yeah, I guess it is a Corvette.
Yes. yes, but I'm saying in that vein.
Sure, it's more limited, yeah.
I mean, Japan, you know, they built some crazy-ass sports cars, right?
Sure, but keep in mind, Korean car culture hasn't been around as long as Japanese car culture.
I agree, but like Japan, GTR, of course, everywhere.
Not everywhere. Occasionally, you might see one,
but in the blood. It's in the Japanese blood. The 286
sure.
sports car. An equivalent of that doesn't exist in Korea, as far as I know.
I mean, a couple Ioniq 5N.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I said.
It's fantastic.
And the Veloster.
No, Elantra N, Kona N.
Yeah,
right.
But these are all cars that have been N-ified. They're
sure,
not sports
cars. They're darn good.
They
and
are good.
Yeah. I would argue in some cases better than a sports car.
I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying they aren't sports cars.
Well, yeah. But I think part of it too is like, so the Hyundai Pony was the first
right.
kind of Korean manufactured and designed car.
But that was back in the 70s.
Yeah, like 1978 or 1979, right?
74 and 74.
Was it that old?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Anyways, but realistically, the Korean manufacturers didn't start developing steam into the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, where the Japanese automakers really started gearing up post-war, World War II, 50s and 60s, right? And then for a lot of years, unfortunately, the Korean car market wasn't taken seriously in a lot of parts of the world. And now it definitely is. So they haven't had that time to kind of establish these sports brands in some ways.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying like they don't necessarily have a halo car. Yeah.
Well, that's what the N74 is going to be.
Hopefully,
right?
yeah.
But they do have, one of the coolest things I saw was the Kia Tasman, which is an actual body-on-frame pickup truck.
Yeah, mid-sized.
Mid-sized, like it's a little shorter than the Gladiator, but it's a lot longer than like a Santa Cruz. And it is a genuine solid axle, low range, locking diff, recovery point, four-wheel drive truck.
Now, we're talking about all these cars. When you get to the walk around later, are you going to show these things?
Yeah, so you'll see pretty much everything that we talked about.
So hold on. We'll show all this to you. So don't fret.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get to see them if you're watching this as a podcast. If you're listening to it, head on over to TFL Talk. All right. So out of all the cars you saw, Tommy, what was the one that you were like, holy cow, this would do well in America?
Well,
you think the pickup truck?
The pickup truck, I think, would do pretty well. The Ioniq 6, not officially coming, but I'm sure we'll get it in the U.S. Nexo, I'm not totally sure we're going to get that.
I don't know, man. I mean, we barely got the second generation of the Mirai. A Honda kind of pulled the plug on there.
Yeah, but Hyundai's doubling down. And there's that new CR-V fuel cell that's coming out.
Yeah, and the problem is there's less fuel stations instead of more. I mean, it's going the wrong way.
Sure.
And those are only in California. I just think that with hydrogen, it probably has a future with heavy over expressway trucks, right? Big rigs, but I'm not sure there's a future in America for cars. I wish there were. It's cool. I mean, I love the fact that nothing but water comes out of your tailpipe, but I just don't see it. It's been so long, and there's been two generations of the Japanese hydrogen fuel cell cars, and yet it hasn't taken off. I mean, you can get a Mirai for like $7,000.
Yeah, but I still think there's a chance it might come because Honda and Toyota are still in that market, and I don't see Hyundai just kind of like leaving a B if there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for places like Korea where they don't have any oil, as far as I know. Same thing with Japan, right? Or very little oil, and then you could actually manufacture hydrogen.
But they have 210 hydrogen fueling stations in South Korea.
Okay, good
and
number.
And I think we have 40-something in California only.
We have like 52 at
and it's going down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Tasman truck, I think, could be popular. And it's a weird design. I mean, it really kind of looks like an alien. And I did a video over at tfltruck.com if you want to see that. And there's a lot of people that are like, what the heck? But it is a very different look. And the interior was amazing. It was such a good interior. Diamond quilted seats, really cool use of LED lighting, had really interesting terrain buttons and modes. And the quality was top notch on this thing. And you can get it with the manual transmission and a diesel engine. So I know they would probably unlikely bring that, although with the emissions thing rolling back.
So I don't want to talk about tariffs because I'm so sick of tariffs and the whole, you know.
Well, it is a very relevant thing in our world.
But with that truck, you're going to get hit by double tariffs. You're going to get hit by the new tariffs, and you're going to get hit by the chicken tax.
Sure.
So that's a 50% tariff.
No, it's never coming.
If they build it in Korea and try to import it here. And I don't think Hyundai or Kia can absorb a 50% tariff.
But there is apparently a Kia electric truck coming to the States.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Which I'm less excited about. I think that the body-on-frame diesel would do really well. I'm not sure a midsize electric thing is going to do anything. But, yeah, it was really cool to see what they're doing. And the company is they're doing some really cool stuff over there.
Talk to him about the Inster.
Yeah, the Inster is a little tiny – it's a teeny, teeny, tiny hatchback that they sell in Europe. They sell it in Korea and, you know, all the other places. It's like sub $30,000 electric. So they brought me out there to check out something called the Insteroid.
Okay.
Which was – it literally means an Inster on steroids.
Or one with hemorrhoids.
Well, yeah. Well, they said steroids, but it could be hemorrhoids.
Yeah. You might want to work on that branding.
But it's a design study where they gave it boxed flares – crazy 345 width tires. They gave it speakers in the rear end and just an insane like 1980s car look. And here's the thing about the Insteroid, which is cool, is like
now you can't get it out of your head, can you?
It is well out of my head. Don't worry, it's gone. What's cool about this Insteroid is officially it's just a design study, but I was talking to them and then they kind of let slip that it was going to be with the initial design concept is what if we put an Instra on a Ioniq 5N platform? That's why they had to make it so wide and look so crazy to actually make it fit over the bigger car.
Gotcha.
So it could actually make it to production. I think there's a chance that we might see like this crazy Insta hot hatch thing, which is just out of this world.
You know, when electric cars started, Tommy, one of the promises of the electric car was that it allowed you with the way that the chassis works, right? Where you basically have a skateboard with the batteries and the skateboard. You could put anything on top. And I was so disappointed because everybody just created a midsize SUV. You know what I'm saying? There was nothing cool that came. You could, you know, with a traditional car, you've got the engine in the front and it kind of limits your design options. With the skateboard, you could flip the whole car around if you wanted to. It wouldn't matter. And yet they just built these boring crossovers. And finally today with like the Peugeot, it's the 5, right? Oh, it's the Renault 5, right? Mm-hmm. Finally, we're starting to see, you know, that renaissance of interesting design come to fruition. And maybe with the Insta as well. And so maybe now we'll see something that we haven't seen, you know, in a long time, at least from car designers.
Well, what's funny is it's essentially like imagine putting a Ford Fiesta on a Mustang platform.
Yeah, I love it.
It obviously isn't going to fit. So what they did is they just boxed the crap out of the flares and kind of molded it to work. And it was really cool in design. So that was one of the other things I saw there. I had a really good time. I thought that the Seoul Mobility Show was actually better than the Tokyo Mobility Show from a journalist standpoint. It was crazy. There were people in front of me all the time. It was hard to get access to the cars, but at least you could get access. Like in Tokyo, they had them behind barricades.
Yeah, you couldn't open them. You couldn't sit in them.
Like here, you could open them and push the buttons and play with things, and they would let you do that. You're still battling 100 people, but at least you had that access to do the job you needed.
And then
to
in
do.
This video that we're going to roll in a second, your sound isn't perfect, so please excuse it.
I do apologize. Yeah.
Because what happened?
I was really jet lagged, and I left my mics in the hotel, so I'm just using the phone mic. So I know it's not great for a podcast to have bad sound. I do apologize, but if you're watching on YouTube, maybe you'll learn something about the Seoul Mobility Show.
So let me ask you this. What do you think of the new G550? So Mercedes lent it to me, and I took advantage of it to go on a vacation with my buddy Steve, somebody I've known since college. He was my college roommate, and we basically flew into San Francisco and drove it down the coast and then hung a hard left and drove it to Moab and then to Colorado. But you had a chance to drive it before it went back to Mercedes. It's the first one here in America that doesn't have a V8.
First official imported one, yeah.
There's some caveats there.
So there's a couple different generations of G-Wagon, and we used to own the old one with the solid axles, which I thought I would like a lot more because I just like Wranglers, and solid axles are cool and feels more rugged. But I actually, after driving this one, I think it's a much better car. It's a lot wider, feels a lot more stable, which is a big problem with old G-Wagons off-road. And it still has the locking diffs, and it still feels like a G-Wagon, so I love that. That engine was really potent. I was surprised by how...
It's a turbocharged mild hybrid six-cylinder.
Yeah, it's like what you find in a lot of other Mercedes products, and it was pretty dang loud. Like it was the first application of that engine where they crank up the sound on the exhaust. Like you could hear it.
There was a $450 option for louder exhaust. So I don't know.
Sure.
I was unable to figure out whether that was piped in, real exhaust, or...
Well, I think it's real, because when you open the window, you can actually hear the exhaust.
So maybe it was real or fabricated, you know, through the speakers. I couldn't figure it out.
It could be both.
Yeah.
But I was surprised by how loud it is. The problem is, though, as Case so eloquently put it, is it does sound like a BMW.
But it's... Yeah, okay.
So you get like this inline six kind of wail and smoothness, and that's great. But one of the biggest character building things that made the old G-Wagon so unique is you had this low baritone kind of growl at all times. Even if you were just sitting at idle, it had this blah, 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 blah. And this doesn't do that at all.
No.
It's got like a... It sounds like a little... Too Jay-Z. Now Case is not going to agree with me, but
Is he agreeing with you?
No,
he's not.
He's not
agreeing.
He's
with
not
me.
Agreeing.
There was also Case.
He's right. There was a 12-cylinder.
Yeah. Saw one at breakfast this morning.
I drove one.
But so the engine is very potent, and I actually think it feels quicker than the outgoing G550, the V8. I mean, it has so much punch, but it's definitely lost a lot of that G-Wagon character.
So my biggest issue with it was that it is incredible, still off-road. You
sure.
feel like it can tackle anything. And ours came actually with some wild tracks. Wild peaks. So it was
That was great. Yeah, I'm glad they gave us that.
To be able to take it off-road. If you want to see that video, it's over at LTFL. But it has a lot of technology in it, and dare I say, too much technology. So there were a lot of times where I was driving it where I was fighting the car, and I really hate that. I'll give you an example of that. And then, you know, you have to go, it's stuff you can turn off, but if you don't turn it off, it becomes very annoying and very confusing if you're of a generation that might be buying the G-Wagon. So I'll give you an example. I had, I've never seen this before, so I had cruise control on, right? And let's say the speed limit is 75, I set it at 75, and then we get into the twisties. Normal cruise control, you'd stay at 75. Now, the G-Wagon, what it'll do is it'll slow down based on the character of the road.
Sure.
And it's really disconcerting when you've got cruise control set. And for my entire life, I thought, you know, it's not full self-driving. It's just cruise control. And all of a sudden, you hit a curve, and the thing slows down to 55. It almost hits the brakes. Mm. And if I were driving it, I mean, I wouldn't take the curve at 75, but I would certainly and comfortably take it at 65. And so it kept doing that, and it was really odd and disconcerting until I figured out that there is this, you know, thing you have to unclick that says something like, you know, cruise control based on road, not conditions, but, you know, road type. So basically the G-Wagon is trying to think for you and trying to slow the car down so that the curve is more comfortable, but it becomes the exact opposite where it's very disconcerting because it's all of a sudden like you're going 75 and then there's a curve and it hits the brake hard and you're like, well, I didn't hit the brakes. Why did it hit the brakes, you know?
Right. Yeah,
so, there were a lot of features like that. There was like a automatic wiper thing that did the same thing where I had to figure out how to just get it into a manual mode where it would just normally wipe as opposed to like wiping 5,000 times a second. So a lot of automation.
I mean, there's a lot of tech. It's got MBUX, right? It's got the big screens.
A lot of automation that tries to outthink the driver.
Sure. I understand that.
That was my biggest complaint.
Yeah,
super comfortable. I think we were getting like low 20s, so relatively fuel efficient, big fuel tank. We were getting like 400 miles, which is, you know, to a tank, which is great because you're driving a box into the wind. And off-road, it was unstoppable. The only thing that stopped me from like going up on the wall, which you could have done easily, is the fact that it was $170,000 and it belonged to Mercedes and I didn't want to, you know, return a broken G-Wagon, which I did because we got a broken windshield.
Right, yeah. The price is... it gets higher and higher and higher every year. But my thing is like, so I think as far from what I've heard, the AMG is going to retain the V8.
Yes, for right? sure. Yeah, it does retain it.
And the 550's gone inline six. But now there's a new version called the 580, which is the fully electric one that has the actual low range thing, which is very cool. And I think if I can't get that V8 rumble, I almost would go for the 580 and get that immediate electric power and some of those fuel savings while still keeping the off-road capability instead of the inline six. So it's kind of one of those things where like, well, I like the inline six and it's smooth and pretty powerful, but it subtracts from the experience. So I might as well just go full EV and get some benefits from that side of the apple. And then if I could afford it, get the AMG as the other option.
Well, okay, now we're back to Terrace. You know, the price for this guy was 170, which was basically the entry level G, right, the 550. With tariffs, you figure that's going to go up to 200. It just becomes unobtainium.
Well, yeah, at some point. But here's the thing. G-Wagons, though, the price is kind of irrelevant. Because during COVID, they were 10, 20, 30, 40 grand over sticker, and they were still sold out. So, like, the price to us mere mortals seems insane. Well, but I think to the typical G-Wagon buyer, you got some elasticity there.
Well, the good news is there's a lot of movement, and this is where the market should be, I think, in the baby G. So there's not only supposedly a baby G coming, but also a baby Defender.
I don't think those are going to be very good.
You don't think a baby G and a baby Defender are going to be very good?
No. I think I'm worried that they're going to have the look, but none of the actual chops.
You don't think they're going to give it a low?
No.
I mean, look.
No, the G, so, they're so, not going to
so
give
Land
it a low
Rover needs to replace the Discovery, right? It's long.
Well, they have.
With?
The Defender.
No, not the Discovery. Oh, sorry. The Discovery Sport. They need to replace the Discovery Sport.
Well.
This Discovery Sport is long in the tooth.
Discovery and Discovery Sport are ancient. And I'm making a joke here.
Okay.
The Discovery is still in production. But no one buys a Discovery when you can just buy a Defender.
I misspoke. The Discovery Sport. The Discovery Sport is long in the tooth.
Yeah.
It needs to be replaced. And so that could be the new baby Defender.
But it's going to be electric. That was what they're going to
say.
No,
not the baby Defender.
I read an article yesterday.
The G might be. The baby G might be electric.
I think the baby Defender's electric, too. It's on the new electric platform.
I wouldn't bet on anything being electric with the current climate, Tommy.
Well, I agree, but these cars were developed 3 years ago.
I don't know about the baby G and the baby Defender. I think those are pretty new. Will Land Rover's new boxy baby SUV be a true Defender?
Yeah. So I think it's going to be electric.
Okay, well,
which is going to be horrible. If they make it electric, no one's going to buy it. That's where we're at right now.
I mean, Ineos walked away from their
Fusilier.
Yeah, which was supposed to be a basic baby Grenadier.
Right.
I see them not being the only ones to do that.
The problem is, the reason I don't get excited about the baby anything is, for the most part, when they do a baby vehicle, they lose the chops, right?
I'm excited about the Jimny. It just can't get it in America.
Well, exactly. So
that's a baby.
There's like two exceptions. The baby Land Cruiser is the 250 series,
yeah,
which still has its chops. And then, of course, the little baby Jimny. But like, what's a baby Wrangler? A Renegade. Does a Renegade really have the same chops?
This is also a problem. Jeep should build a baby Wrangler.
Does the Discovery Sport have a low range?
I mean, Jeep should build the Jimny.
But they're not now.
Right now, they shouldn't be.
There's no money.
They shouldn't be building Compasses and Renegades.
I agree, but there's no money in it. They can't. They're just especially with this climate, they can't make money at an $18,000 car.
Jeep can't make money selling a $70,000 Wrangler, dude, which is where we're at right now.
Well, I think they've been trying to, but whether it's been working.
Or $120,000, V8 Wrangler. I mean, those days are gone. And other thing, now we're talking off-roaders. I've noticed that there's a lot of Bronco Raptors sitting on lots right now, and they're offering $10,000 discounts on them.
The one baby, that's a good point. The one baby version that worked pretty well is the baby Bronco. The Bronco Sport is very good.
Does really well. And the big-ass version of it, like I said, the Bronco Raptor, is just sitting on lots. And I think the reason for that is anybody who wanted a Bronco Raptor has bought a Bronco Raptor, and so now they can't sell them.
Well, that's not the point I'm making, though. Is that
that's the point I'm making.
That's a car that transitioned well to a baby version. Like a baby Defender, if they go like baby Bronco Sport, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But Discovery Sport, not good. It's just not a very good
car. Well, it sold really well. It wasn't.
It is a good selling car, but from an off-roader enthusiast standpoint,
no,
there's nothing there.
Yeah, but it would, it did what it was supposed to do.
So is like a baby G-Wagon, is it going to still be good off-road, or is it going to be a GLB with a different top on it?
Don't know.
Right? That's the big question. Whoa.
So anyway, I did this trip in the G, so thank you, Mercedes. It was a very good. Both the G does something that very few cars can do, and it does it, of course, at a price. But the magic in the G is that it's incredibly capable off-road and yet very comfortable on-road.
Yeah.
And that's something that Jeep or Bronco or Ineos have not been able to do. All those three are really good off-road, but not so good on-road.
That's right.
And the G manages
it's really good on-road. Yeah. Forerunner's good on-road, though.
A Defender, good on-road, good-ish off-road.
Yeah, and I think the G, it's an amazing car. I would love to own one, but at $200,000, it's kind of untenable.
And I say goodish because obviously the G has three lockers, so you can go into some pretty extreme stuff, whereas the Defender has, one, maybe two. Most likely one.
Yeah, but it does have an amazing four-wheel drive system.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
But like that doesn't help you when you're doing like the wall.
It does help you when you're doing the wall.
Well, you know
quite a bit. Yeah.
Gosh, everything I say you disagree with.
It's true. Like,
Tommy, what time is it? You'll just argue with me.
I would argue a good four-wheel drive system helps you off-road at any point.
Okay, fair.
All right, guys. Well, I think we should cut to my Soul Mobility show.
Yeah, let's do it.
So this is a walk around. Once again, the audio isn't great, but you'll have a kind of POV first-person look at what it's like going through the Soul Mobility show, and you can check out some of the cars and trucks that we just talked about, like the IONIQ 6 and Nexo and the Kia Tasman. So we'll cut to that footage now, and you can watch it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Mobility show. I'm here on Media Day about to take you through some of the cool cars that were just revealed, some of the crazy cars you don't get in the U.S., and some cars or trucks maybe that we should get in the U.S., so let's get right into it.
Now, Hyundai flew me out to Seoul, South Korea to check out the mobility show and show off some of their new products, and we'll get to that in a second, but first I have such an embarrassing confession to make. In my jet lag stupor, I forgot my microphones back at the hotel, so I'm filming this straight to a phone with no mic. So if the audio is terrible, I am so sorry. I'm really embarrassed, as I should be, but we're gonna power through it, and it's worth it, guys, to stick around, because there really is some cool stuff we're gonna show in this video, including the car we're looking at now. So this is a facelift on the IONIQ 6, and when this car debuted, it had this streamliner design that was very polarizing. People either really liked it or they really didn't. And this new one is such a vast improvement. And this front end especially is really cool. So they got rid of kind of the round lights and they've gone to these new strip lights. You can see it there. This person has just popped the hood, but you'll still get the idea. That flash out horizontally with a turn signal on, and it's just a more cohesive design. It's a little bit less odd, and I think it works really well. We also have some new wheel designs, and we also have a new rear end, which is a vast improvement over the old one, which had kind of this weird double wing design. Now, I'm going to show you the rear end on this red car over here, because this is also something pretty exciting. This is an IONIQ 6 N line, which is teasing an upcoming full-blown IONIQ 6 N, the crazy high-performance drift missile version, which will be coming out in Goodwood this summer. Now, let's go to the rear end here and I'll show you exactly what I'm talking about. The old car had this weird like double wing, where it had one up here above the trunk lid and then it had the little duck bill. The new one has ditched that for just the duck bill. And guys, it's gone from kind of a weird looking car to I think one of the best looking EVs on the market. It's got a little bit of like 911 2.7 RS back there. It's kind of rad, I have to say, especially in this dark red against this two-tone black. Now, not a lot of details regarding battery, powertrain changes, nothing like that. So we're still kind of in the dark about that. But this N line is kind of rad. I really like what they've done with the steering wheel. It's got the N steering wheel with the drive mode buttons there, which is cool. They've changed around the interior just a little bit. Nothing too dramatic. It's got a new climate control panel, which is definitely needed out of the compared to the old car. That's quite a nice improvement. So yeah, just some little livability things that should make a big difference. But there you have it, the new IONIQ 6 N-Line in the flesh. Really, really excited to see what they do with the full-blown IONIQ 6 N. And we're going to make our way over here and check out this car. Now, this has kind of been the star of the show. There has been hundreds of journalists around it basically all day. I haven't really been able to get a clean shot at all, but I'm going to do my best in this podcast. Now, this funky-looking SUV, this is the new Nexo. That's right, the hydrogen fuel cell vehicle that debuted a bunch of years ago, and Hyundai has given it about 3 inches of additional length. It's got a new powertrain. It will do 0 to 60 now in 7.8 seconds instead of 9.2. The old one was kind of a snail. This new one should be quite a bit quicker. I'm going to try to make my way around to the front. There we go. And the front end is really cool. It's got these 4 pixels behind this little glass panel. It's very squared off, very chunky, and it's a very attractive car now versus the old one, which was kind of swoopy and weird. On the interior, they also got rid of the 7,000 buttons that it had, and now it's got the 2 screens that we see in all the Hyundai products. It's got dual wireless chargers. It's got this kind of pillow look on the dash, which the designer said might be something we see in other Hyundai products. We also see that pillow look there on the door. It still has the silver accents though, but yeah, pretty big improvement over the old one. And the rear is especially strange. The taillight design here, they've got like this 4-quadrant pixel is the motive throughout. And this is cool too. Hydrogen fuel cell, they give it a plug on the outside.
so you can use the fuel cell to power things. By the way, the South Korean plug is just like a happy little guy. Look how happy it is to see you. Woohoo! But the back portion is crazy with this seat pillar that swipes up, and then you got that kind of almost looks like a split tailgate. It's not a split tailgate, but what a cool design overall. I wish it was all-wheel drive. It's still front-wheel drive only. It's got more hydrogen capacity. It's up to nearly 7 kilograms now, which Hyundai says should be good for 700 kilometers of range. 700! It's kind of a lot of range. 437 miles. But of course, the hydrogen infrastructure is so limited in the U.S. I'm not sure that range increase really matters all that much in the grand scheme of things. But anyway, it's cool that they're still pushing it. What they need to do, they just have to build out the infrastructure. Someone's got to do it, folks. Someone has to do it because the technology is here. The cars are here. The cars are good, but you can't fuel them up. And there are actually fewer and fewer stations now in California thanks to Shell pulling out of it. There's like 210 here in Korea, and I think there's like 40-something in all of California. Anyways, off to Genesis. So the premium Hyundai Kia cousin has a couple cars here. We've got the new refreshed Genesis GV60. They've kind of given it a bit of a nip and a tuck in the front end, which I think is a big improvement. Let's talk about these really quick. These are really popular here in Korea. The camera mirrors. So the rear view mirrors on a lot of cars are gone, replaced by cameras that then display on the inside. I'll show you on that side too. You can see it. Now, I've always thought these looked so, so cool. But talking to some European colleagues who have driven these, apparently they're not great because in the nighttime and the rain, things get pretty hectic and fuzzy. But bigger problem is like you go to adjust your perspective with your head and it doesn't change because it's permanently mounted on a little screen here. But anyway, I digress. This is the new GV60. It's a pretty mild update for the car, but you know. It's a pretty interesting looking design. And then we come to, I think, the two most beautiful cars of the Seoul Mobility Show. So Genesis is just pulling out some stunners here. Look at these twins. So we have this incredible rich green coupe that has those Genesis streaks on the headlights that make the way to the rear. But in coupe design, it is such an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous design. It's called the Grand Coupe. And then they also have a convertible version, which give a very much Bentley vibes here. And these are the two cars we're most protective of here at the show. This grand convertible, though, looks like something Bentley would have done in the 70s. I mean, absolutely stunning, stunning designs, which are just killing it. So Genesis, I think, you know, a brand that gets respect in the U.S., but not as much as it deserves, because they really have some of the most incredible designs, and they continue to impress with these grand coupes and grand convertibles here at the Seoul Mobility Show. But drop me a comment below if you think anything you've seen in the last couple months is a better looking design. I'm not sure I've seen that. So fairly small show compared to the other auto shows I've been to. Like I've been to Tokyo Auto Salon and the Mobility Show, much smaller than that, but a lot less people and way more access. I like this event a lot more than the Japanese equivalent of this in Tokyo. A lot fewer brands though. Here's Mercedes, got some cool G-Wagons. This is a really cool display. This is a G450D, which is a car we don't get in the States. I wish we did though. And this is an awesome display of this G-Wagon climbing up this rock wall, and it's half covered in mud and half perfectly clean. I think that's really neat. We've got this orange G63 over here. Check this thing out. Kind of a matte orange color, really unique. And then back here, I do believe this is the new electrified G-Wagon, which I think is called the G580 in this kind of matte blue, which gives it a pop. One of the things about these G580s, you can always tell one because they have the square tire cover in the back. If this one's unlocked, it might be locked. Oh no, it's unlocked, and that's where your charge port goes, in that little square guy. But you can option it with a full-size spare, which is the way to get a G-Wagon. You'd be crazy to get one without a full-size spare. And then we got one more up here, which I believe is kind of showing some of the heritage and the options you can get with the G-Class. Yeah, that's like some of the exclusive bits. Kind of looks like with that black front end, it got in an accident, it wasn't repaired properly.
kind of funny. And then as we come over here into the Mercedes booth, I mean, they got a lot of the AMG and Maybach products, but not a lot of standard cars. So here we've got, you know, this incredible C-Class coupe, and we have some of the GT products, some of the bi-turbo V8 stuff. And then as we make our way to the back here, we have Maybach products. And Mercedes is a very premium brand here in Korea, as I understand it. And you do see a surprising number of the Maybach cars, like this GLS 600. I've seen a few of them on my brief trip here in the last couple of days. But it's astonishing how Korean-centric this company is when it comes to the cars that they buy. Something like 70% of cars sold in Korea are manufactured by Hyundai, Kia, or Genesis alone. That's 7 in every 10 cars you see. And it's true. You walk down the street and everything is a Hyundai, a Kia, or a Genesis. It's pretty amazing. Now, if we go over to the Kia booth here, some news that we got to talk about. This little guy up front, this is the new Kia EV4. We haven't seen this in the States yet, but this is coming to the U.S. as the new affordable entry-level Kia sedan. Initially, I thought it was to compete with the Model 3, but I think it's going to be quite a bit cheaper. And it's got a funky design to it, kind of swept back low. I did have a chance to sit in it and play with it a little earlier. We got that video over at alltfl.com. It does a lot of stuff really well, but the headroom is very compromised. Really, really hard to get comfortable as a taller passenger. So I think that's a bit of a miss for Kia. But if you're under like 6 foot, you'll be fine. But if you're 6'1", 6'2", your head's going to be scraping, at least with the sunroof. And then it is a trunk instead of a hatch, which means that the trunk opening's a little smaller than I would have liked. But anyway, it's kind of funky. And they also have a GT version of a GT line, I should say, which is over here. Now, I've been told in Korea there's going to be a hatch version, but we're only getting the sedan in the U.S. And someone can check me that in the comment section if that's true. But there's the sedan version. Now, this is a Kia PV5. This is one of the big reveals of the Seoul Mobility Show. And basically what this is, it's like a small delivery van that gives very much ID Buzz vibes, but a little bit more utilitarian than that. They've got passenger versions. They've got the cargo versions. Here's one up on the stage there, and this really interesting two-tone design. I think, like, my big takeaway from just the show here is how far ahead I think Kia designers are and Hyundai designers are and Genesis designers are than a lot of the world. And they're more willing to push the boundaries and try things. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you got to give them credit for doing some new stuff. We're going to make our way to the back of the Kia stage. And I know this is the Talking Cars podcast, but this is one of the highlights of the show for me. It's a truck. This is the Kia Tasman. And I've read a lot about it, and I think we've done maybe a video about it in the studio, but this is my first time seeing it in person. And I thought it was going to be a Santa Cruz with, you know, a bit of cladding on it, but this is an actual body-on-frame pickup truck being manufactured by Kia with two engine options. There's a turbo diesel four-cylinder, and there's a gas turbo four-cylinder, which, if it were to come to the U.S., which I don't think it would, but if it were, that would be the one we would get. It's out of, like, the Santa Fe, another Kia product. It makes 255 horsepower, 317 pound-feet of torque, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, what an interesting design. It gets a lot of hate online, this truck, because the flares are weird. They are weird. You got these tacked-on front and rear flares, and you get kind of this bull-nose look. Personally, though, I kind of adore it because it's different. Once again, they're trying things a little different, and it is a proper truck, genuinely. It would be like a Ranger competitor. It's 10 inches longer than a Santa Cruz. It's like 5 inches shorter than a Gladiator. But the bigger surprise for me is, like, you know, you look at it and think, oh, it's going to be pretty rough and tumble on the inside. But check this out. Pleated leather seats, heated seats, ventilated seats. We got this crazy red ambient lighting throughout the entire thing. It has an actual four-wheel drive system with four auto, four high, and four low. It's got a locking rear diff on a Kia. Freaking awesome. This thing really has a lot of cool stuff. It even has an integrated brake controller because it can tow up to 7,700 pounds. And a lot of cool details, like this door handle that's got this knurled finish on it. And this, like, little leather bit on the door and the back seat. Once again, that's just different. It's got zip pockets back here for storage. I mean, they really thought this thing out, and it's got a ton of little details that I'm not sure are super useful, but just funky, like this. Push this little button, and the fender flare folds down,
And now you've got a little integrated storage cubby there. And the bed, it's full-length bed in this Kia. Here, let's see if I can pop it open. Kind of tricky with one hand, but it even has this like little tray. It's rated 300 kilograms, 700 pounds, something like that. 600 and a bit. That slides on out. You can't tell if it's a composite bed, but it's definitely a 5-foot bed back here. It's got 2,600 pounds of payload, for heaven's sake. And it even has, check that out, solid rear axle, Scott axle recovery points. This is the X-Pro trim, which is the off-roady trim. There's one over here. I don't know what the trim make is on this one. I'm sorry, but it's more of a street version. And then they even have like a Raptor version too. The concept they just revealed here, which is crazy. I think it's on 35s. It's got a lift on it. They painted the flares body color, which just looks better. But the Kia Tasman's going on sale in markets like Australia. And I think it's going to be pretty popular if I had to take a guess. And this is some cool innovations. This is a topper setup I've never seen before. It's like a half topper, half bed. So it's got a little baby tonneau cover back here. Let's see if I can demonstrate it with one hand. You can pull it, you can slide it, you can see how that works. And then, of course, you have all the space here underneath the tailgate, underneath the tonneau. Yeah, like a normal bed. All right, nothing too surprising there. But then if you come over to the side, there's a panel that lifts open on this half topper, and you get like a full-length lockable trunk. Kind of weird, kind of funky. I don't know if I totally would buy that, but you know, at least they're innovating, or at least trying to innovate. And then here's this interior. It's different, kind of. It's actually like a dark green in here, and then you've got this tan contrast. But this was like, I'm blown away because I expected it to be kind of soft core and not that special. And the Tasman was a big shock. If you can get over the strange front end, I think there might be onto something here. So we're gonna walk through some of the smaller vendors. Oh, I do want to stop over here. Apparently, they're selling Ineos now in Korea, and they have this model called the Chelsea, which is like a luxury-oriented version of the Grenadier. It's got some, you know, some nicer bits on it, and maybe some less aggressive wheel tire combo with a slightly lower profile. But yeah, it's so weird because everything here is sleek and low and trendy and modern. And then you get Ineos, which is a throwback to the 1970s. And I love it. And this is really cool. This is a Grenadier on portals. It's a portal prototype. And you can see how it works with this reflection. Do my little zoom in there. Look at that. It's got portal axles. If they built this, they would be my hero, because that is just such a cool rig. Absolutely killer. So anyway, that's what's happening here at the Ineos booth. There's the Chelsea I was talking about. It's got like this white front end, and it's got some luxury bits and bobs in it. But let's keep the fun rolling here. We're going to see what's going on over here. We've got a lot of focus on autonomy, which I shouldn't be surprised about, but that is what it is here at the Seoul Mobility Show. There's been some focus on driver, or I should say wheelless vehicles, like quadcopters. Lotus has a little booth over there with the new Electra. But some cool stuff going on over here. So I'm going to make my way down the side of the show. It is a really fairly small show relative to New York or LA or Detroit, although I haven't been to those in couple of years. Those have gotten a lot smaller, especially Detroit. But this is an electric boat, which is gorgeous. It's called the Vinsen, and it's pretty gorgeous. And then this is cool. This is a mule. This is like an alternative to a side-by-side here in Korea. It's by a company called Clio Designs, and it's a perfectly modular look. It looks like a toy, right? It's fully battery electric. You can see the battery there under the seat. Super basic. It looks like something, it's like a mule, like a Kawasaki mule you'd buy at IKEA. This is the UTV. They also have like a little truck version. And then over here, check this out. They even have teeny tiny versions for city use. But I love the look of these little guys. They're just so fun and different and quirky and interesting. And this one's got little bike tires. Oh, it is a bike. It's got pedals. So the Koreans here have got some very clever approaches at, you know, mobility, and that's why they've kind of changed the name of this from an auto show to a mobility show, right? Because it's a focus on what's transportation. But let's not kid ourselves, it still is vastly a car show. These are really interesting. I'm gonna make my way through the smaller booth here.
past the seat manufacturer. So I see a lot of these in Korea, which are elevated roof SUVs, which is kind of funny. So like this is a Sorento, but most of them are Carnivals, and they basically pop the top on a Sorento or a Carnival and then go crazy on the interior. This is a company called CN Motors. I'm not really familiar with what they do, but I do want to show you what this gives you. This gives you a huge TV. It gives you some additional headroom there. This is a Santa Fe that has that pop top. I mean, look at that. It's got teak floors in it. That's crazy. And the Carnivals are really the most impressive of all the cars here. So you can see exactly what they're doing. This one's got a bright yellow interior and it's just unreal. So that whole luxury minivan thing, we saw the Lexus LM, the luxury mover. And that trend continues here in Korea with this CN, and it's just awesome. It's really cool. So this is a car we don't get in the States, but I've seen a ton of here in Korea. This is called the Hyundai Grandeur. It's a luxury car. You see them sometimes as taxis, but it's a really attractive design. And then we gotta make our way over to the far corner here. BMW had a booth, but I don't think they revealed anything that we haven't seen in the US. But this is something we don't see in the US. This is BYD, which has been in the news a lot lately. A lot of TikTokers and YouTubers and that kind of thing have done videos surrounding BYD. But they are a Chinese brand that are pushing the envelope as to what EVs can do, what internal combustion cars can do. Really, really popular in China. And of course, unavailable in the US. This is the Yangwang U9. Please, no jokes on the name here. But this is an all-electric supercar, hypercar, 1,287 horsepower, and 0 to 60 in 2.36 seconds. It has a fin on it. Look at this. And this is the car that made the news recently because apparently it can jump. It can, like, jump over obstacles and holes and potholes and things in the road. So, the Yangwang U9. This is another car, too, the U8. This is the car that can float. It's a full, crazy, luxury SUV. These can tank turn, apparently, once again, like 900 horsepower. I think this one's a range extender. You also see a lot of LiDAR technology on these cars because self-driving is a huge aspect to selling cars in China. Kind of a cool grille, though, with this crystal look and the interior.
Everybody's shocked, which I'm doing already.
Interior is crazy. I mean, any surface they could line in leather, they just lined it in leather. I mean, it's unreal. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of interaction and experience with the Chinese automakers, but from the people I've talked to that have, I guess the cars are pretty stellar. This is the BYD Seal, which is a Model 3 competitor in China. Once again, incredibly popular. And then this is the car I want to show you. This is the Bao 5, which is kind of like if you could get a luxury Bronco in China. And there's definitely, like, some of these cars you can see some design influence from Western makers, but for the most part they're different and they're unique and they have their own flair. And like this one's got a little Bronco in the front, it's got a little bit of Defender on the side with this like colored panel, but pretty neat. And the inside, once again, hugely tech focused with these cars. We see that there on the screen. And then out back it does have a swing gate, and it also has a full-size spare mounted to the tailgate. I think it's power. I don't want to break it, but I'm pretty sure it's actually a power-actuated closing tailgate. So, good space, and I don't know much about the off-road capability of the Bao 5, but I did drive the BYD Seal recently, which is a plug-in hybrid small pickup truck, which looks to have a lot in common with this vehicle. I'll show you the interior of it. Two-tone leather seats with massage, just like the hybrids. This is a plug-in hybrid, or a range extender, I should say. You got that kind of unique-looking shifter, big screens there, big roofs. Yeah, and apparently the money you spend on these is not that big. So there you guys have it, a quick look at the BYD stand. And it's been a really good show. I really appreciate Hyundai for flying me out here to experience some of Korean car culture and some of the technology that they're focusing on, that allowing me to see what other companies are doing. And there's some really cool stuff going on here in Korea. Yeah, and if you have a chance, guys, I strongly recommend making it out to the Seoul Mobility Show. So we're here at the far end of the hall. They also have some bigger stuff, like these excavators, if you're so inclined. And this is what I was talking about earlier. This is the flying car section, which I'm always very hesitant about. But there's some flying cars, and then BMW and Mini have a stand here. Let's go see what Mini's up to in Korea. Very curious. Mini's been very popular here. I've seen a ton of them. You know, these kind of small, cute brands are, I think, pretty well loved, and certainly Mini, maybe not small, but definitely still cute. So here's the electric Countryman. You can see it here on my left, a car we do get in the U.S., but this is a car we do not get in the U.S. on my right. This is the Aceman, which is a small four-door hatchback that's kind of trying to give off crossover vibes. It's got a very aggressive front end. It's very grumpy. Fully electric as well. And then here we've got the new electric, or the new gasoline Mini convertible. And then the i4, and they have the updated iX there on the podium. Well, folks, there you have it. A quick look at the Seoul Mobility Show. As always, it's been Tommy. Thank you for listening and watching this little podcast. Sorry about the audio.
Well, that was cool, Tommy. Really enjoyed that. You certainly didn't manage to get yourself into any kind of trouble like I did, so congratulations.
That's right. Yeah, it was a really, really cool trip. So thank you to Hyundai for inviting me out and letting me check it out.
Do you think that the Koreans are at the forefront of kind of car design and car culture in terms of creating cars that people want to drive? Is that the sense you get?
No.
Okay. All right. What's the sense you get?
Well, I think that they are doing a great job of that, but from what I've seen, I mean, some of the most impressive cars that were at that show were not Hyundai Kia at all. They were the BYD cars. I mean, I think a lot of the Chinese companies are really doing some crazy stuff that that some of like the more Western brands aren't doing, right? And some like there was a supercar there that can jump over potholes, right? Which is kind of silly and a little gimmicky, but like it goes to show they're really trying some wild stuff at relatively low prices. So I think Hyundai and Kia are really innovating in design. I think that's where they are leading the forefront, is some of the really interesting looks and designs. But from a technology standpoint, it still feels like we haven't experienced the vehicles that some of these Chinese makers are doing.
So let me ask you this. What would keep BYD from buying Chrysler and rebranding the Dolphin as a Chrysler and building it here?
I don't know.
Nothing. Right? Chrysler builds one car right now, the minivan.
Well, I think that there could be some governmental pressure for Chrysler not to sell to the Chinese makers.
But it's going to create American jobs, right? I mean, it's basically playing into the current narrative where we want Americans to build American cars. BYD buys Chrysler, opens up a factory, rebrands the Dolphin and all the other cars that they're building as, I don't know, the Chrysler or whatever, Sebring. And away you go.
Well, let us know what you think in the comment section.
I don't think that's such a crazy
idea. No, I don't think you're wrong there.
And Stellantis would probably be happy to offload Chrysler.
Yeah, at this point, they're probably right.
And they have a built-in dealer network.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's what always has made America great, was that there was just a lot of competition. And this is one way that BYD could certainly get into this market. Anyway, guys, let us know in the comments below if I'm daft or if that's something that is possible. And as always, where should you go to, Tommy?
AllTFL.com.
Yep, we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.